You're listening to episode 343 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of the Building Psych Strength podcast. I'm Dr. April, and I am your host. I'm really excited about this week's episode. You know, we've been through 2 years of the pandemic at this point. And it feels like, given, you know, the changing requirements around mask mandates and just the way that society, at least at the point at which I'm, you know, recording this, it feels like things are changing again. We're entering this stage of change. And what's been interesting about this is to think about the impact that this upcoming change will have on our well-being as individuals, as a collective, in our personal lives, and in our professional lives. You know, we've learned a lot over the last 2 years about what it means to live a good life, for example. So to borrow from Martin Seligman in positive psychology, what does it mean to live the good life? And it's funny because, you know, a lot of what Martin, you know, put together in his PERMA model, which we'll talk about a little bit in this episode, so stay tuned if you want to know more about that. But a lot of the factors that he identified in his model are exactly the ones that came to the surface during COVID as ones that were either helping us get by or when we didn't have access to them, like close personal relationships, because we couldn't be around people as often, we found our well-being degrading because we didn't have those supportive factors. So well-being is such an important thing for us to think about and cultivate and really put a framework around. Also, as we think forward, the idea of us potentially going back to the office and how often and what does that look like and how do we think about it? And if you're an employee, how do you support yourself or just an individual person? How do you support yourself through this next chapter of change? If you're a boss or a leader or an executive or you own a company, how do you think about supporting your team and what are things that you need to put in place? All of these are big, important questions, all inside the landscape of this very human experience that we've all had for the last 2 years. And because of that, I wanted to bring in an expert who can help speak to these topics using data, using research, and using some really deep expertise in this work. So today we are speaking to a man by the name of Ryan Wolf. Ryan is a well-being consultant for Gallup. He consults for their clients and Gallup associates. He actually leads Gallup's health and well-being strategies through partnerships with Gallup's research team, benefits departments, and external medical and wellness partners. So the solutions that he creates and the initiatives that he puts in place help serve Gallup's clients, associates, and family members. P.S., if you know anything about Gallup, you know that they are the people who put out the Clifton Strengths Finder assessment. So if you haven't taken that assessment, it's a really great one. We'll list some resources at the end of the podcast for doing that. But just FYI, Ryan's top five Clifton strengths are discipline, achiever, futuristic, activator, and harmony. And if you're curious, I looked mine up while we were having this conversation. My top five Clifton strengths are, in order, activator, futuristic, learner, strategic, and focus. So just to give you a little like look into the minds of both Ryan and myself as you're listening to this conversation. And if you haven't ever taken a strengths finder about yourself, it is eerily accurate and so interesting. So I would highly suggest you do that. I'm really excited about today's episode because it's one, again, that feels very relevant to where we're at in the COVID pandemic and as we're navigating some pretty murky waters going forward with our professional and personal lives. And there's some really great actionable tips in here. And there's also, dare I say, a lot of just validation maybe to things that you have felt and concerns that you might feel as you look forward. So let's dive in to my valuable conversation with Mr. Ryan Wolf. Ryan, I'm so excited that you're here to talk about, I think, a topic that is going to impact both people and individuals who might be employees in an organization, as well as, you know, even leaders of teams and executives in organizations who might be thinking about how in the heck do I support people going forward. So thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, April, it's really good to be here with you.
So you work for Gallup, which is like this big, I mean, unless you're there and very, very familiar with the company, it can be like this big amorphous company. Can you talk a little bit about your role and what you specifically focus on within this very large organization?
Yeah, we're actually probably smaller than most people might imagine. We have probably about 2,000 employees spread around the world, and maybe about half of those are in the United States. So I actually know almost everybody at Gallup, either by name or face or relationship or partnership. So it's cool to operate in an organization that does have big impact, but also feels small still. So that's pretty unique about Gallup and the role that I have. So I love that. But yeah, I work as a well-being lead for Gallup. So my career started at Gallup in about 2004, so 18 years now, and started in the fitness center. I came out of my undergrad with a degree in exercise science. So I started helping people kind of develop new habits for their physical health and kind of stand up a new wellness program. And then my role kind of evolved and changed as our research on well-being developed. And kind of a big change that kind of a keystone moment was when we conducted, and when I say we, I mean our research team conducted the World Poll in the early 2000s. And then our framework of well-being was developed, and we have a kind of a five elemental framework of well-being. So physical well-being is obviously the one that kind of people think about first, maybe when they think about wellness, but career well-being is part of it. Then there's social, community, financial, and physical. So I think I said them all there, but also, you know, obviously there's other elements that, of well-being that we know are impactful to us, things like emotional and mental health as well. But those are the five elements that we found that are measurable and actionable for humans all over the world. We interviewed residents in more than 150 countries, at least 1,000 residents. A lot of those interviews were done face-to-face without technology.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really highly representative. But that framework came out, and then that helped me develop just more programs and initiatives and, I guess, kind of advice on living well beyond just eating broccoli, going to the gym, getting 8 hours of sleep.
yeah.
So definitely important part of my work. And then really, so Gallup's, if you've known about Gallup before, you heard it today here, you might know about Clifton Strengths. So that's a really big part of our work, is helping the world identify what their talents are and how to invest in them so they can become strengths. And as of now, more than 26 million people have taken the Clifton Strengths Finder. So that's a big part of my well-being content and career, I guess you could say, as well as employee engagement. There's a lot of synergy between and research that that really tie well-being and employee engagement together. So we can get into that later as well. And hopefully I answered your question. I kind of went down this hole of what I've been up to, but there you go.
That's so helpful. And, you know, the fact that your background is in the space of well-being and there is such a broad definition of that at Gallup is why I was really interested in talking to you, especially right now. So when we think about, I think it would be helpful if we sort of look backward and then look forward. As we look backward over the last, I don't know, 5-10 years or so, how have you seen, I don't know, well-being really come to take, I don't know if it's a center stage position, but more of, I mean, it at least has a place on the stage now in the professional space. Whereas if you think back, like if you've watched, you know, the movie or the show Mad Men or things like that from, you know, back in the day, whatever time frame that is, it didn't used to be that way. But now increasingly employees have well-being programs and support their employees in that way. Can you talk a little bit about that movement and how it's changed over the last 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's just a different expectation that employees have now and an interest. Obviously, you know, with everything that's happened in the last couple of years, now we realize that employees maybe have the upper hand in how they feel and can operate at work. And there's just so much data shows how that is true and has manifested, but people are more interested now in purpose versus their paycheck, and they think about their life more than maybe they think about their job, and they want their manager to be more of a coach than a boss, and so there's these transitions that we're seeing that are, I guess, less transactional and more transformational that employees want out of their experience of being an employee.
Yeah. And I feel like as we look forward, the experience that we've all been living in over the last 2 years is bizarre, maybe to say the least.
No doubt.
It's so interesting because, you know, on one hand, this has been such a shared experience. We all went through sort of the quote unquote, the same difficulty of the pandemic. We all had different resources. We had different experiences, you know, individually, but we were all handed the same challenge of here you go. Here's this crazy, you know, experience that no one could have prepared for in terms of just the tentacles into our lives. Mm-hmm. And it's been so interesting to see the impact that it's had on us, you know, socially, professionally, personally. And I think it is really, I don't know, my guess, and I would love your opinion on this, is that it's likely poured gas on those needs where I don't know if we can ever go back to the way that we operated before this, because it's been such a big transformation. What do you see coming in the space of well-being, especially in a professional setting where, you know, we already had some of those seeds planted before the pandemic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, everything was amplified. I totally agree with that. You mentioned, can we go back or is there a possibility, or we can't really necessarily go back? Well, we've got some research on return to office, obviously. RTO, huge topic right now. And gosh, it has been, it's come in waves. Like last summer, we talked about return to office a little bit more than we did during this winter, but now it's heating up and we just hear about it more. We our neighbors are going back more. You might be back already. Maybe a little bit more than others, but kind of all experiencing that in a bigger way right now. In our research, we found that 7 out of 10 people would prefer to remain hybrid or remote full time. So it's pretty big stat there. A large majority of people still want that flexibility or that ability to kind of have a say and have that autonomy about where and when and maybe even how they do their work and complete what it is that is expected of them at work. When we found that even more significantly, 9 out of 10 employees who have remote capabilities, so people who don't need to be there necessarily to complete a job, like such as a tree planter or a street sweeper, those people want to remain either hybrid or remote. So 90% of people who found out that they can do their work effectively during the last 2 years, they want to stay that way, or at least have that possibility. So I think that's a big part of how we'll design and operate our work in the coming 12 months to 12 years.
Yeah, I totally agree. I want to go a little bit off the rails here and ask you, and maybe you have data on it, and that's great if you do, or just give us the big forewarning that this is an educated guess if you don't have data.
Sure. Yeah.
But here's my question about that. So my question in situations like this, where we see these big movements, right, and people, like 90% of people who have shown they can do their job from home still want some of that flexibility and this big aversion to going back to, quote, the office. The question that kept coming up in my head is why? Like, there's the obvious, right? I mean, some obvious things, but when I think back to sort of the before that we had, if we go to kind of the severe end of the continuum, just to kind of set the stage a little bit, we heard from a lot of people that traditional knowledge workers, 9-to-5 desk job sort of office workers, increasing numbers of hours during the day. So their days creeping earlier in the morning, creeping later at night. People skip lunch. They're not taking breaks. They're just like in meetings, like constantly and nonstop. There's a lot of, say, oversight and sort of keeping tabs on people and who's here and how long and all of that. And when we map that lifestyle, we'll call it, over onto the basic things, like think about those components of well-being that you just mentioned and what it means to do well in each of those capacities, that old lifestyle is not that. It just isn't. And so my hypothesis that I do not have data for, is that, but it's an educated guess, is that it's not the office, the location, the geography necessarily. It's the office, the lifestyle. Like, we don't want to go back to that lifestyle that was not conducive to well-being. Would love your thoughts, either data-driven or speculative, are totally fine at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So we found that the number one reason people aren't interested and is I've got some data that's in my head that I know is for sure, and then the rest of it, I just encourage you to go find
perfect.
It.
Perfect.
First, number one reason, and the people want to remain hybrid or have that choice or that flexibility is because of the commute. Mm. So that's number one. Second one is because of their well-being. So people feel like it is. I don't know if we asked, if we don't want to go back to that lifestyle, but I think you're right. I think you're totally right. Like, we just don't want to revert back to the old school way of doing things, but yeah. So people, kind of languish their commute a little bit, and then they realize that having that flexibility can improve their well-being. Well-being is obviously a broad term, and it's interpreted differently, to many people, but they feel like they'll have that chance to have more of a say in how their life is lived.
Yeah. That agency is such a big deal. You know, before we hopped on to record, we talked a little bit about some of the work that we do in the space of life design, and you know, we talked about Stanford Life Design Lab and stuff like that. So just to give this audience context as to what we were chatting about before we hopped on, it's such a big component in that, in being able to make changes, make tweaks, run little experiments, see what's working. And then when things work, when they feel good and the outcome is desirable, go down that new path And it can be tough to do that when, you know, the parameters of your life, the beginning and end of your day and how and when and with whom and where are so prescribed. Mm-hmm. It's tough to do that experimentation that it takes to keep just an adapting, continually growing, changing person. It's tough to keep them happy in a static, controlled environment, it feels mm-hmm. like.
Yeah, totally. 100% agree. So yeah, having that choice is important. I know at least it is for me, and I can sense it is for you too.
Yeah.
And I even have discipline number one, which is a Clifton strength where you appreciate structure and routine. But I still love that freedom and flexibility as well. There's also, I still think on the other side of this, if we could speak to the other side of this, the days that we do spend together still can provide a lot of value. And I think it's just going to take a lot of good intentional communicating and planning from organizational leaders to get it right, to make the office start vibing again.
Yeah.
To be honest, like when people are going back right now, maybe on their own, and it's not necessarily required, they're just having a different experience inside the office. It's not the same as it was before when there was a lot of energy. There were good things from pre-pandemic that we do appreciate. We want those back. We just don't want the old stuff that we didn't appreciate. We just don't want that back. So there's things like having better access, maybe to technology, so fewer interruptions in Wi-Fi. Maybe you got access to a printer that you need to print out something, maybe you've got a little bit better background in your office, and something technologically that could be improved. Also, collaboratively, so kind of getting together socially share that experience together, and not have those awkward, maybe potentially awkward moments where you're emailing or IMing a colleague who you don't necessarily know real well, but mm-hmm. maybe if you had 10 minutes with that person or an accumulation of several 10-minute conversations with that person, be super easy to initiate those communications on chat. I think about the people who I chat with the best, you know, I am like through Teams or Slack. They're the people who I knew before the pandemic.
Yeah.
We had this established relationship, and we have these inside just knowledge or jokes that we can get a conversation started with easily. With new employees, it's harder for me. I can't send the emojis I might send to somebody else. Everything I do is obviously PC, but you just don't have that. You don't have that connectivity yet. So I think that will help when we do have that opportunity to get back and collaborate. And also the belonging. So DE&I has added that beat towards the end. A lot of people have seen lately, and hopefully just the sense of belonging can be enhanced when we kind of see each other a little bit, and it's planned really intelligently, and it's not feeling like it's such a requirement, but more of an opportunity.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And that takes some intention and thought on the place of the leader, the executive team, the organization, to set things up in that way and make that time valuable mm-hmm. rather than, it's just a reshuffling of where we put our time and energy and intent to making sure that we're facilitating good in-person time, because we know how much we can get done.
Yeah.
You know, without needing that.
Exactly.
I'm curious about mental health in particular. You know, we're hearing about this mental health epidemic right now. Mm-hmm. And part of me just, it's disappointing, because this was there before the pandemic. It was bad before the pandemic. And what was interesting about the pandemic, you know, we mentioned we had this shared experience. there was no lack of hardship before the pandemic. Like, we just weren't all going through the same hardship at the same time. So at any given day, you have a coworker who's getting divorced. You have a coworker whose child is sick. You have a coworker who just lost someone in their life. You have a coworker who's experiencing financial trouble. I could go on and on, but those are sort of diffused challenges. And it's hard to see that we all, the collective, are dealing with our own stress. And I think what the pandemic did is it threw this big stressor down on everybody's plate. And all of a sudden we could like relate to each other. The circumstances were different and that mm-hmm. gave us something to talk about with respect to this challenge. But yeah. the challenge we were all that hit us all in the face was the same one globally. So I'm curious about how you and Gallup are thinking about mental health as we go forward now that we've all sort of collectively woken up and said, okay, cool, this might actually be important for us to focus on. Maybe we just needed this lesson to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. We have been studying emotions for a while. So since 2006, we've had a global emotions report, which would be a really great resource for people to look up. And for 15 years, negative emotions have been rising. So things So things like worry, stress, physical pain, so loneliness, anger, sadness. There's some charts and some graphs on this report that are, it's kind of wild to look at. Certainly they spiked in 2020, 2021, but it's all been rising prior to that, the decade and a half prior to it, when we started evaluating it annually. So you're right. It's just been amplified and there's been a lot of gasoline that's been poured on these emotions. So yeah, there's certainly going to be some initiatives and more likely like systems, like cultural systems that just need to be designed and transformed to support the well-being, the mental well-being, mental wellness, non-clinical, obviously,
sure.
mental well-being that we can, those of us in I think of we as in the corporate space can influence. And it's not just, you know, if I say the three-letter EAP word, I know people will cringe or talk about mental health apps that, you know, that we might be given access to. And certainly we need to have resources like that available, but it starts sooner than that and higher than that with leadership, just recognizing that mental health is something we can't just really overlook or just pass down or outsource. That, you know, some of the root causes could be potentially within our own work spaces and workplaces and how people experience their day. So how can we design these environments that our people are in to really support their mental health?
That's so good. Yeah. Yeah. And something that we're thinking about a lot, too, is this idea that human beings don't operate in little silos. We don't have a little box for our home lives where when we're home, we rattle around in that little box, dragging our baggage around in that little box. And then we drop that baggage and then we come to work and we go in that little box. And then we drag our little work baggage around in there. Mm-hmm. We just drag all that baggage with us wherever we are.
Oh yeah.
And I think it's increasingly important for professionals, employers, leaders, and even just people as they're thinking about supporting themselves to think so much more broadly. That's why I loved when you said it's more systemic or societal than that, because we can't just focus on, I mean, there's important skills that people need to learn in the workplace, right? Like leadership training is wonderful. Like it's needed. It's absolutely needed. but that's teaching you how to do it. It feels incomplete. It feels like we need more than that to support a whole person who has a full life, not just a job. They have a full life that brings with it, you know, transition and complexity and challenge and amazing things too. It's just a lot to juggle for just human beings.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. So it really starts with a leader, probably someone on the executive level, to say, we honestly do care about our people as human beings. Certainly, there are KPIs all up and down our financial charts and all of our financial statements that we need to cater to. But without caring about our people, they won't care about us as a business. So I think it really starts there. We've got a great framework of employee engagement that not to sell and toot our horn about.
Go ahead and toot. That's awesome.
But there really there's really 12 elements of employee engagement that can really contribute to psychological commitment that employees have towards their organization. And a lot of them, you know, deal with, you know, really human centered types of questions, things like somebody at work cares about me as a person. I have the opportunity to use my strengths, so my God-given talents and abilities, I can put them to work. I have a best friend at work. I have, you know, supportive relationships at work. So these are things that are kind of outside the normal madman type of philosophy that are directly related to business outcomes for all industries, not just the touchy-feely ones, but for blue collar and everything in between.
Yeah, it's funny that, again, we all learned this collective lesson recently, and it's so funny that it took us so long. You know, it maps beautifully over onto a lot of what we know about positive psychology and what supports what, like, Seligman would call the good life, right? Mm-hmm. He's got this PERMA model, which is positive emotion, which, of course, when we experience positive emotions, we feel better in our lives. But positive emotion, engagement, this is like a sense of flow, a sense of that sweet spot between challenge and ability, that when we're working there, we experience, you know, a better life. So positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning authentic, true, connected relationships, meaning I'm part of something bigger than myself, and then achievement. I can actually, for the sake of just achieving things, I can check things off. I got that done. Mm-hmm. And when we think about how that and some of these 12 elements that you were mentioning map over onto, you know, people's day-to-day life, certainly their work being part of it, of course we should be focusing on this stuff. It's just like, we're so adorable that it's taken us so long to get here.
I know.
Like, come on.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't know exactly why it's taken so long, but a lot of it's just, you know, perhaps cultural resistance and just inability to get away from the way we used to do things that we always have done.
Yeah.
So thankfully we had this disruption, although it's been terrible in a lot of ways. It'd be even worse if we didn't learn from it and apply a lot of these concepts that we knew that were softly knocking on the door before 2020, but now they're constantly dinging the doorbell and we just have to answer it now.
I feel like they kick the door in. Like, yeah, exactly. Hi, we're here. I'm just going to kick the door down.
Yeah.
You know, as we're wrapping up, I'm wondering if we can focus on a couple of groups of people right now. Let's focus on both on the employee, just people, like, and not even employee, just like human beings, people. And then on the employer leader company side,
sure.
Same question to both. We're about to enter like another round of transition, and whether it's the final one, who knows, whether it is just another one in the process, you know, things seem to be changing just in terms of requirements on us, masking and I mean, like where we can go and the things that we can do and that are suggested as safe and not safe, that type of thing. So it feels like we're in this pivoting point again. What thoughts do you have for, say, on the individual human being, just people, employees, mm-hmm. what thoughts do you have for them to support themselves as we enter yet another time of transition and change?
Yeah, that's awesome. So it definitely is going to change. And we know, so one of my examples of change was in May of 2020, I did a podcast where it was all about how do we get people when they're going to return back to the office this summer. There were some people who thought that was going to happen. And certainly there were places where that did happen, where there were more essential employees, but it was more of a collective, like everyone's coming back. But anyway, I'd say there's some steady eddies that people can think about in terms of how they can improve and kind of just intentionally work on their own personal journey and their personal well-being. And it's really all about other people. So first one is really leaning on best friends. So think about who your best friends are and how you can share anything and everything with them. And mm-hmm. they want the best for you.
Yeah.
And they can give you the things, the support that you need. So always be relying on your best friends. Another one is just thinking about how you can improve either your relationship or your communication with your manager. So your manager, we found, is someone who has a large impact on your well-being and the outcomes in your life. So think about ways that you can, if you're not yet comfortable with your manager, how can you start communicating a little bit differently with this person who does have such an impact on your vitality? And then as that grows and develops, just think about how you can share goals based on those elements of well-being, whether they're, you know, around your physical health or your financial health or your career well-being. This person has a huge impact on your career wellness and your well-being in that regard. So think about how you can develop that communication, that relationship, and that dialogue back and forth between each other. And then just being open to just a lot of different ways to experiment with new habits, new routines that that can be ways to intentionally be working on your health and well-being. And it might not necessarily be the old school ways of going to the gym and going on a diet, but ways that you can kind of rethink movement, mm-hmm. nutrition, and rest. There's a lot of different types of rest. One of the best articles that I read last year was the seven different types of rest that we all need.
I need to find that.
Yeah, I can provide it to you. But it was a beautiful TED Talk. I think it was a TED Talk that that blossomed from an article. And so there's a lot of different ways we need rest than just sleep, and a lot of different ways that we need to move our bodies than just at the gym. And there's a lot of different ways that we can nourish our bodies that don't involve just buying healthy groceries. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, sharing meals with loved ones and friends and neighbors, and maybe just other different ways that we haven't really experimented with or thought about yet.
Yeah.
And another one is strengths too. So think about your talents and your God-given abilities and how you can use them in kind of your pursuit of well-being. If someone's telling you that you need to jump on the Peloton and join together, but you don't necessarily want that competitive environment or that social sphere of influence, maybe you need to do something else that's different for you. And I certainly not disparaging Peloton, because there's strengths and talents that you or I might have that really are perfect for something like a Peloton platform. But think about how your strengths can be applied to the work you're doing on your well-being.
That's so good. And how about on the flip side, on the, say, leader, employer, executive side, things they need to be thinking about as we move forward in the next year or so?
Mm-hmm. So just, I think a big one is just auditing the culture and thinking about ways that it can be transformed. And certainly it's hard, sometimes impossible, change the culture with same people in the boardroom. But thinking about how it can change and how it must change from how employees experience their day-to-day, whether that's inside the workplace or whether that's virtually throughout the work spaces that we occupy and where we collaborate. And then thinking about sustainable ways that we can work. So you talked about how our baggage that we bring back and forth between work and home, and how sometimes that baggage isn't actually moving, physically moving from work and home, is just right there in the living room.
Yeah.
And all of your work stuff and all of your home stuff goes right into it. So thinking about how we can sustainably work and thrive wherever we're at, whether that's hybrid, remote, or full-time in the office. And then, you know, thinking about ways that we can be more intentional and just a lot better about how we can connect and collaborate with employees who we either haven't seen for a while or we haven't seen ever, and getting smart about maybe who we outsource with. A lot of executives or managers aren't necessarily experts in how to help people collaborate and communicate better mm-hmm. with each other. So think about experts who you can bring in and help you facilitate some of that connection. And just being, you know, being compassionate about that and really authentic about it. And certainly there's going to be some people who it just might feel uncomfortable to them, but it just needs to happen. There's catalysts and amplifiers of well-being that we have. There's things, thinking about how wellness and well-being, and sorry, I'm a little bit like, I operate in that space. So I kind of just am always thinking about how do we get more well-being to our organization. And a lot of times when I say something like that, people think, oh, okay, we need more wellness programs. Well, we don't necessarily need more wellness events or programs. We need well-being to be integrated into lots of components of the organization. So training managers to become more of a coach versus a boss, helping them integrate well-being questions into conversations and regular communication. So doing so in ways that aren't awkward. So ways that are just going with the flow and natural. Things like recognizing individuals. So celebrating successes and integrating well-being into all the communications that are sent out to employees, whether that's from the top leaders or from managers, thinking about policies, rules, and guidelines and how well-being can shape those. And as well as things like technology or even facilities. So the way you design your workspace, your actual physical office, is it designed for an optimal well-being experience? Same with technology. Is our technology designed and utilized in a way that really helps our employees thrive?
I love all of those. Those are so practical and helpful to think about. just as we face this next coming,
yeah,
I don't know, year or two. It's so hard to determine. Maybe in like 3 years, I'll be like, April, you were so adorable in 2022.
I know.
Once again.
Seriously.
But you know the best laid plans.
Yes.
I would love to know how you think about psychological strength. What does it mean to you?
Yeah. So psychological strength, I kind of just kind of go back to some of those elements of,
yeah,
of employee engagement. So one of them is at work, I have, or my opinions matter at work. Mm. So feeling like you and your thoughts can be shared out loud and that they matter to people other than maybe just your best friends, but they matter to your colleagues and to your manager and to even to leadership. And then, you know, best friends is another big one. I go back to it. It's just so important for people to have a really, yeah, close relationship at work. So when ultimately there's always going to be things that we're going to be potentially upset or unhappy with at work. And if we have someone who's in our corner, who we can have a quick check-in, a quick chit-chat, or just someone to bounce ideas off of, really helps us to just flex our brain a little bit and our emotions and use some words and conversations in a safe zone where we can get some feedback and kind of identify where we might need to go with this place that we're feeling. And maybe it's something that we just have to deal with. And there's really not much we can change, but a best friend could also help us identify ways that we can overcome this and ways that we can kind of institute some change. So those are some kind of ways that I think about psychological safety.
I love it. This is so good. Ryan, I'm so appreciative of you spending some time today. This is such a important topic to be diving into right now, especially, again, probably something we should have recognized before, mm-hmm, but hey, no time like the present. And I think as we look to the next couple of years, especially, we have a huge opportunity to take the things that we've learned from, you know, to your point, a terrible experience. I mean, terrible loss, terrible disconnection, all of that. But can we take lessons from that to do better going forward? Where can people connect with you? Where can they learn more about Gallup and the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So Gallup.com is a great place to go read articles that myself and my colleagues are reading. Most of it is based on our data and our research. Some of it's opinion and practical advice. So news.gallup.com is a great place. LinkedIn is a place where I'm at and would love to connect with people, place to just share good ideas and support for each other. So those are a couple.
Amazing.
Yeah.
This has been so great. I just am so appreciative of you spending time and bringing your expertise to us today. So
thank you so much for having me, April. It's great to talk with you.
Amazing. Okay, friends, hang out for just a minute. I have a couple of resources that I want to make sure we get in your hands, things that came to mind during our conversation with Ryan. So hang out for a minute and we'll be right back with those goodies for you. All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ryan Wolf from Gallup. I thought it was so validating to the experience that we've all had over the last couple of years. And honestly, as we look ahead, some concerns that we might have for how things will change again as we navigate this next chapter, we'll call it. So hopefully you took some really actionable things away, whether it is to support yourself as just a human being or maybe it's and or whether you are looking for things that you can do to support your team or coworkers in a professional environment. A few things, actually kind of a small handful of things. It's quite a few things this week that I want to make sure that you know about. One,
recent episode of the podcast, episode 331, I did a sort of life design episode focused on designing your work from home life. As we think about this notion of hybrid work, or even working even some of the time from our homes as more of a permanent thing, I would highly consider thinking about setting yourself up with some intention, using the design process to craft the environment that you're in to set you up for success and to feel good. In the same way that a professional environment might want to think about building culture and building an environment to set people up to perform and be successful and feel good throughout the day, you should be doing that same thing with your home and the office that you have, say, away from your typical office environment. So that episode provides some good tips and a framework for doing that. Again, that's episode 331, linked below. Second resource, we also did a recent podcast episode, this is 334, on navigating change. This is so interesting as we think about going back to the office, because there are some, say, tactical things about navigating change. Have you communicated clearly what is going to happen and when, et cetera? These sort of check the box pieces of navigating change that are definitely important. But what can get lost in it is what Ryan and I spent a ton of time on today is the human element of it. How do we help human beings move through change? What might they be experiencing and feeling as a result, that empathy side of it? That episode walks through a model of change that is so incredibly helpful to help you think more holistically about supporting a team or even moving yourself, moving through change. So episode 334, Navigating Change, again, that one is linked below. A resource that Ryan brought up that we were chatting about is an article he read on TED.com. So it actually was turned into a TEDx talk, but what he sent was an article on TED. And this is about the 7 different types of rest. This is so interesting because I would have thought, okay, you got to take a nap once in a while. But it goes beyond that. Physical rest is one of them, but they also talk about things like mental rest, sensory rest. Zoom fatigue is a thing, right? Sensory rest, creative rest, they go on and on. But I just want to tease that article because it is a great resource and a really holistic way to think about, are you resting in all of the ways that you need to feel rejuvenated? Because we're like human beings who need to support ourselves. So really cool resource. That is linked below as well. Thank you, Ryan, for sending that link. Last, a couple of links related to Ryan. I linked to Gallup. Again, if you haven't taken the Clifton Strengths Finder, I highly suggest you do. It is a really impactful way of thinking about how you engage with life and how to set yourself up for success, how to play to your strengths. So I've linked Gallup's website below, and that's also where you can find some of the articles and resources that Ryan talked about during our conversation. And last, I've linked to Ryan's LinkedIn page. What a lovely human being. Like, what a thoughtful, creative, intelligent, insightful human being. So highly suggest you reach out, network with him on LinkedIn, and see what kind of fun trouble you might be getting into by connecting to another really great human being. Thank you so much for joining me this week. This was a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I've worked in a lot of different capacities across my professional career. And it's definitely something I'm thinking about as all of you who are in more maybe traditional jobs are thinking about the changes coming up and how you might support yourself and your teams as you're moving through them. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I will see you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.